Before that, we just quick overview of what happened in chapter 14. In chapter 14, we basically discussed the three modes of material nature. We started with how a soul comes to this world and becomes bound by the modes, and how by living within the modes we get a variety of destinations. And then it concluded by how either we can go up, go down, or stay where we are at the modes, but we can get out of the whole material world. And that getting out was primarily Brahman liberation. Brahma Bhuyaya Kalpate. But naturally the question comes that by practicing bhakti to Krishna, why should somebody attain Brahman? Well, that is because that's what the person wants. But what if the person doesn't want that? The person wants Krishna, then he will get Krishna. So that we describe in this chapter. So this chapter begins by talk. The last chapter ended with avyavicharini bhakti. And this chapter begins by talking about how avyavicharini bhakti how bhakti can be avyavicharini by developing detachment. So that means the last chapter was the chapter of jnana, which led to Brahman. Now this chapter will take the same principle of bhakti and avyavicharini bhakti, and it will show how it leads to Purushottam Bhagavan, who is far higher than Brahman. So here is the overview of this chapter. So in verses 1 to 6, Krishna gives the analogy of the upside down banyan tree, so that one can attain liberation by detachment. Now if one doesn't develop detachment, if one doesn't develop detachment, then one undergoes the cycle of birth and death. One stays bound and undergoes transmigration. That's verses 7 to 11. And while transmigrating, Krishna doesn't abandon us, but Krishna maintains us materially and also provides spiritual knowledge to us. That's verses 12 to 15. And then verse 16 to 18 is called by Chakravarti Pada Trishloki Vita. That is the essence of Vedanta. That means Krishna helps our material existence and helps us in our spiritual endeavor also. So in our spiritual endeavor, he helps us by giving wisdom. So what is that wisdom? That wisdom is the essence of Vedanta, which Krishna will explain over here. And then he gives the conclusion of the Vedanta. To know Krishna means to know everything. By the last two words of the Vedanta. Chapter starts by describing for avyavicharini bhakti lead us to Bhagavan, first giving an attachment. So that attachment is described like the analogy of an upside down banyan tree. Then, if the attachment is not there, the soul transmigrates in this world and is bound. So while we are bound in this way, Krishna helps us materially and spiritually. The spiritual wisdom that he gives us is described from verses 16 to 18. And the conclusion of that wisdom is further told unambiguously in verses 19 to 20. So, in one sense, two of the most important chapters in the Gita, which talk about bhakti, are the shortest. The 12th chapter and the 20th chapter, and the 15th chapter. They're short, but they are containing very amazing wisdom. Shall we start? Twelfth chapter. 15th chapter is well known as the Purushottam Yoga. Now in the Padma Purana, there is the Gita Mahatmya. And the Gita Mahatmya talks about the Mahatmya of various chapters. So based on that, different chapters are different. Many times when people have this, groups have Gita memorization contests. Similarly, they tell the 15 chapters to memorize. So that's based on the traditional Mahatmya which have come about. So let's start. 15 chapter. Sri Bhagavan Vacha. ऊर्ध्वमूलम् अधःशाखम् अश्वत्थम् प्रावरव्ययम् छन्दाम् त्रियस्य पर्णानि संवेदसवे सवे. Important points in this. Krishna said this tree is upside down. It's lit with fascination. Now it's not said specifically that this world is a reflection of the spiritual world, but it's told by, it is an inference from the fact that where do we see upside down tree? In a reflection. Now the Ashwattha is traditionally known as a tree which belongs to the fig family. So banyan is one of those trees. And because later on Krishna says that this also has roots going downwards from its branches. So that means it's a banyan tree. Ashwattham prahur avyayam. So now, this ashwattha also means a is no, shwatha is a variant of shashwata. So that which is not shashwata, ashwattha, that which is temporary. So although it is temporary, Krishna is juxtaposed in place next to the word avyaya, ashwattham prahur avyaya. The imperishable banyan tree. Why is it called imperishable? Because the material world will continue to exist. Although the material nature will continue to exist, all the souls will come and go. So it is temporary for the residence of the soul. For the devotee it is temporary because it will end. But for the non-devotee, they think it to be imperishable. And the material nature itself will always keep hosting souls. And that's why that is its intention. And chandamsi asya paranani. Parana is leaves. So chanda is the Vedic literature, Vedic hymns. Vedic hymns are the leaves. Why are the Vedic hymns compared to the leaves? Because the leaves give rise to flowers and fruits. So the dharma, artha, kama, moksha and the flowers and fruits of the Vedas. So they will grow on this tree of material existence. As I said, from the leaves come the fruits and flowers. That's why it is a chandamsi yasya paranani. And yastam veda. So veda veda. Who is the knower of veda? Not just one who has memorized the chanda, not just one who knows the leaves. But when he knows the whole tree. Just like earlier it was said that, you know, who knows the Vedas? One who knows the purpose of the Vedas. Yavana Sol the Pani Saratanam Dodavati, 2.46. So here also, this section starts with the description of the upside down tree. The second verse continues this. Adhashodvam prasuta tasya shakha
kunam kavrtha vishaya pravala adhashya mula yadasanta tani karmanu bandhi manushya loke.
Okay. So Adrashya Yashoda, some branches go upward and downward also. Why? You said that some branches go upward and downwards because the modes are watering the tree. And depending on which modes are watered, the tree will go in that direction. If goodness is watered, the tree will go upward. If ignorance is watered, the tree will go downwards. So there's the modes of the water which cause this tree to grow. And Vishaya Pravalaha. And what grows at the end of the tree is the sense objects. And Manushya Loke, this tree exists in this human planetary system where people get bound by karma, karma anubandhi. So, now the Acharya will add some more detail. Every tree is, if we have a reflection, the reflection has to be on the water. So, the water is the desire. So, the tree grows from the desire and the tree is reflected in the desire. So, when the desire is dried up, then there will be no more reflection. As Shankaracharya says that, that when the kaam is gone, then samsara left for the living entity. So, like that. Now, Krishna, Arjuna gets a little intrigued by this. Upside down tree, some branches go up, some branches go down. There's some questions come in his mind. What is all this about? And Krishna tells, like, you cannot understand this tree. Understand the purpose of what we have to do with this tree. Interesting, what Krishna says, first thing he is telling is, Narupamasye Hatato Upalabhyate. Upalabhyate means to understand. Can I understand the form of this tree? Nanto Nachade Vichasam Pratishtha. Where it begins, where its foundation is, where it ends. The giant tree. So, Chakravarti Vaz explained that you cannot understand the nature of this tree because different people have different opinions about this tree. Some people say this world is false, some people say this world is true. Some people say Canada is a false syndrome. Some people have different opinions about it. So therefore, he says you cannot understand it. Like I told earlier, Shabda Jal Maharanya Na Bhuktaye Na Muktaye. So the words are like a big jal, which traps us. Na Bhuktaye Na Muktaye. So one cannot understand the nature of this tree. But what one can understand it is that this is miserable and I have to get out of it. So exactly what this tree is we can't know. So we can understand now that it is miserable and it is important that we get out of it. Yeah? Yeah, it's an analogy. Okay, that's a good question. See. Now, let me complete the analogy and things will become clear. So now he says that what you have to do is that this the roots of this tree are very, very deep rooted. And what you have to do is asanga shastrena, by the weapon of detachment, cut off this tree. So, now Chakravarti Pada explained that we cannot cut this tree off. What we need to cut off is our own entanglement in this tree. So, this tree will go to, we cannot end the material world, but we can end our stay in the material world. And that is authentic, you know, authentic pralaya is the soul's material existence end. That's what we can do. So now, the idea is that, in analogy, if there is some squirrel or some tiny animal which is there in the tree, now, if you start searching, where is this tree? Up, down, left, right, bottom, inside, outside. You know, actually the tree is endless. So, that way, even the animal in the tree may not be able to find out, the squirrel or something, how big is this tree? Where is its root? Where does it begin? Where does it end? So like that, in this material world is so vast and complicated, The vat is not just in the spine. But it doesn't the complicated nature of people living and complicated nature of the views that people have. So, and as in Bhakti Raghava Maharaj is giving me a lecture there. So, here is a very interesting point. That the more people are influenced by more and passion ignorance, the more their behavior becomes unpredictable. The more their behavior becomes unpredictable. You don't know what to expect from people. This is a very nice looking person suddenly turns out to be a robber or a criminal or this or that. So it will become more and more unpredictable. That's why this world, in terms to understand its nature, is difficult. Just as for an animal on a tree, to understand the expanse of a banyan tree is very difficult. That's that. So the analogy is correlated like that with the reality. So now, asanga shastareya. So just as originally this tree began with Purusha Prakruti Stoli Bhumte Prakrijanma, that is the beach. So now, how do we get out of this tree? By? So that time it was Sangha. Now the word is Asanga. Purusha Prakruti Stoli Bhumte Prakrijanma, Karanam Guna Sangha. Sangha. Guna Sangha was the cause. Now Asanga Shastra is the solution. Drudhena Chitva. Asanga has to be very terminally practiced. And after the Asanga is practiced, then what happens? One has to go to that destination from which one never returns. Now we say, okay, we are going to Brahman. No, that's not enough. You go there and find out the Supreme Person from whom the whole creation has expanded. And Tataha Pravritti Prasnataha Pudani. Now, in the Vedic tradition, it is said that at the root of every tree is a jewel. As I say, what is that song? Nana Ratna Nibbadda Mulla Vita Shri Yukta Vrindavani. So, Sattva Sanasaram is at the root of all these trees are jewels. So like that he is saying that if you go deep into this tree, at the root of this tree is a jewel of the Supreme Personality of God. So, you have to find that jewel and surrender to it. Chardyam Purusham Prapadye. Prapadye is surrender. So, although this analogy is very, in one sense, enigmatic and puzzling, difficult to understand. But the implication is basically that you have to get out. And then the next verse, so here the analogy ends basically. And next verse describes how one does prapadye. So, Patra is in the purport that this verse describes the method of surrender very nicely. Nirmana moha sitatanga dosha
attain to that eternal kingdom.
Yeah?
The first thing, in the first verse, you're telling that reflection is on the water of desire. If you try that desire, the water, then there is no reflection. So, basically, that this is just you have to get rid of the desire and the other things, the details of cutlery and all these things that will exist.
Correct. Yeah, that's what Acharya described, that water is Purushanama described it, so then I'll have to take those. So the idea is that now we have to look at different aspects to understand analogy. So now it is okay. There are two distinct aspects we talked about over here. The way the Bhagavad Gita is describing, it is not even describing that this tree is false. It is describing the tree in very literalistic terms. And literalistic terms it is saying that you have to cut the tree down. So, now we understand that first of all, this world, now our Acharya throughout has explained to us that this world is like, this is an analogy. This is like a what we call an allegory or metaphor to illustrate something. So now, what is that metaphor? That metaphor is of a soul entangled in the material world. So the tree represents the material world. So now that is not. We have two distinct analogies over here, which are locked together, which is causing confusion. The tree is compared to the material world, and to become disentangled from the material world, we have to cut the tree or cut our entanglement with it. So for that, we need asangashastra. But the other aspect of the analogy is that why is the tree upside down? Because it is a reflection. And if you want to go from the reflection to the reality, you have to dry up the place where the reflection is. And there also the solution remains the same, asanga. So basically there are two different things. One is to illustrate, to explain the tree itself as the analogy. And the second is to explain the upside down nature of the tree. So when we take the tree itself as the analogy, then we have to cut off ourselves for that. Asanga is like an axe which cuts off. And the tree is treated as a tree, you know, upside down nature of the tree is emphasized. Then it's a reflection, and to go from the reflection to the reality, you have to drive the reflection. For that purpose, we have the analogy used. Which one? This material world is of course a reflection of the spiritual world. So the question is that is this a real tree there in the spiritual world? Yeah. Now of course when you say the real tree is there, the real world is there. So the tree is the analogy for the world. So the real tree is there in the spiritual world. Of course, that is true. Prabhupada also uses this upside down tree analogy. It's a very it comes in the Veda, the Rig Veda it comes in the Kapha-Upanishad also in analogy. Prabhupada uses this to explain the exalted Gaudiya Vaishnava Tuta. Or appears. How is it that? That which is at the bottommost in the reflection is the topmost. So, the enjoyment out of marriage, being marital, extramarital, is considered very immoral in the material world. But it is considered most exalted or refined in the spiritual world. So, Prabhupada does state that in terms of that there is a real tree in the spiritual world. So, then of course, the tree represents the real world. And yes, it is true. So, what we see in this world is originally there in the spiritual world. This is what the Mayavadis cannot explain. You know, why is there this, why is there personality, why is there relationship, why are there qualities? You know, what is our standard argument if we say that God must be a person? What is the standard argument that you, why God should be a person? Yeah, we are all persons, so God is a person. The Mayavadi said, you know, the foundation itself is wrong, you are not a person. The foundation itself is wrong, you are not a person. So how will you answer that? It's because of illusion you think you are a person. Once you come out of illusion, then you are understanding you are not a person at all. It's nonsense because? Yes. I am enlightened, I want to enlighten you. Okay, this is one important point. That, see, there are certain statements which are value judgments. Like there is a very nice conversation of Prabhupada, it's slightly divergent, but actually it's an important point to discuss. You know, Prabhupada is talking, we took this in our Vrinda, I think Vishaka Vrinda, that is another topic, Topanadi is over there. So there Prabhupada is saying, you know, you say that you are enjoying, I am also enjoying the sense verification. So you say you enjoy chanting, I will enjoy sense verification. So then everybody says, no, but you are not enjoying, you are suffering. He says, no, I am not suffering, I am enjoying. But you will grow old and die. He says, you will also grow old and die. But your enjoyment is third class enjoyment. You consider third class, I consider first class. The Prabhupada just refutes everything. So basically, so you know, Now, when we call certain enjoyment a third class, or certain argument a nonsense, now what happens? This is a value judgment. I mean, it can be done, but value judgments should be done after the values of these judgments are made or explained. If we do it before, now for example, now for outside people, impersonalist, Mayavadi and Vaishnava, they are both sons. And when we criticize them, they are very upset. They can't understand. Now we have genuine reasons for criticizing them. But unless we share our values with them and explain the values on which we are making a judgment, what will happen is they will judge based on their values. And their values is that anybody who renounces the world, he is talking about God, he knows scripture, he is a secular person. So, in general, if we do value judgments without communicating values, we alienate people. So, if we have to do value judgments, some Prabhupada would do it very often, but generally he would do it among his disciples. So, the disciples knew the values, and Prabhupada was very value judgmental in one sense, when he was talking with devotees, this whole rascal. But generally speaking, if Prabhupada is talking with those people directly, it's not always that he is doing that. Now, in some cases, Prabhupada will be like that directly also, and there is a reason for that. You know, even if we have not communicated our values, if the other person values us a lot, then he will accept our judgment without evaluating it. So Prabhupada was an elderly person, Prabhupada was a saintly person, and he had preached all over the world. So people had respect for him. So one of the reasons why we can end up being anti-preaching in the name of preaching is, if we do value judgments without communicating values. So first, we have to communicate the values. Now, another thing is social service, you know. For outside people, it's a very noble activity. And if we condemn it, we can appear very hard-hearted and otherworldly and impractical. Now, do we have to condemn it? We may have to condemn it at a particular level. We condemn it because it is incomplete. But without communicating to people the values of social service, it becomes very difficult to actually convince them. So earlier, snake, right? Question. Yes. Continue. Yeah. So, Rajwan, do you have questions? Yeah.
You are telling that dry of
the dry to dry of the nose, the reduction.
Dry up the material design, upside down creates the dry up.
Hare
Om Jai Vishnu.
Doesn't matter, it's not worth it, you don't need it now.
So Hare Krishna, you can look at your Bhagavad Gita for the verses. So we were discussing the fifth verse, which is in the first section, of how by detachment we can disentangle ourselves from the material world. So this Nirmana Moha is also a sequence of thought, just like the Agnishta Sarvabhutana was. So, Nirmana Moha, so the Moha of wanting honor in this world. As long as we want honor and pleasure in this world, we keep wanting to stay in this world in the hope that we will get the honor and pleasure. Nirmana Moha, Chitta Sanga Dosha, so that a desire for that Maan is due to Moha, and that Moha comes because of Sanga Dosha. Again, the word Sanga is very important. So, Sanga is association with Madhya, Sanga, which creates Dosha in our mentality. Sanga Dosha. And if you want to overcome that Chitta Sanga Dosha, that is to be Adhyatma Nitya. One has to be always spiritually conscious of one's own spiritual identity. And to be Adhyatma Nitya, one has to be Vinivritta Kama. One has to be freed from lust. Prabhupada translates that as done with lust. The done is a very strong word. Sometimes somebody is frustrated in some job and done with this job. Finished. So Prabhupada gives the word, Krishna is a very special word over there. Vinivritta Kama. Nivritta means retired. Vinivritta means retired to never return. So Vishesh Rupena Nivritti. That is Vinivritti. So to be forever retired, as Prabhupada explains, that lust, anger, greed, we serve them so much, a normal master, and we serve them, a normal master becomes satisfied, now we are enough service. And the more service we do to lust, anger, greed, the more service they demand. And they are never satisfied, they never retire. They never let us become retired. This is how Prabhupada explains that famous verse, Kama Dinam Katina Katibha. Palita Dunnidesha, Tesham Jata, Maina Karuna, Krupano Pashanti. Kama Dinam, Kama, others, Katina Katita, how many Dunnidesha, how many evil orders they gave, and I dutifully followed them. But in spite of such beautiful, faithful service, Tesham Jata, Maina Karuna, Krupano Pashanti. This master has not had even a drop of mercy on me. And this master is not, I was not satisfied, he is not satisfied, and he is not letting me live in peace. Therefore, now I have understood Utsrut Jaitan. Athe Yadupate Sampratam Labdha Buddhi. Now my buddhi has awakened. And therefore, what I am going to do? Utsrut Jaitan. Utsrut Jaitan means kick out, put you out. Athe Yadupate, O Lord of Yadus, I am going to view this. Tvam Ayata Sharanam Abhayam Mam Nehushvatma Dasi. But just like in the earlier days, there were slaves and slave masters. The slave tries to run away, the slave master will come and catch him and enslave him again. So like that, I am running away, I have kicked away the service of this lust, and I am coming to you now. But this lust is going to chase me and catch me. Tvam Ayataha Sharanam, my dear God, I have surrendered to you. Abhayam Mam Nivukshvatma Dasi. I am the servant of yours, please grant him fearlessness. So all of you know this prayer. All of you know this prayer? No, no, it's a very, very beautiful prayer for Brahmacharya's major. Sisi Madhya 2216. It's a very, very beautiful prayer. So many times I have served, but neither is this master transparency nor is he releasing me. Therefore, now I have decided to kick out the master and take up Krishna as my master. So, Vinivritta Kamaha. Okay, just let me complete this. Let me learn. So then, Nivritta Kamaha. And if you want to be Vinivritta Kamaha, then there has to be the freedom from dvandvaita. Because as long as we think this is pleasure and this is not pleasurable, then there is always dvandvaita. Dvandvaita vimukta. Sukha dukkha sangai. The equipoise in happiness and distress. Alright? Gacchanti. Such a person will go. Amulaha. So when a person is having all these qualities, then he is never deluded by Maya. Amulha. So Amulha is the opposite of Vimulha. Vimulha or Sammulha. That is actually completely bewildered. Vimulha is not at all bewildered. Patam Avayam. He will attain the eternal destiny. Yes. We need to have a fan on. It's creating a lot of noise. Where is the sound coming from? Motor. Oh. Okay. Anyway. Please speak loudly. You can keep the fan on if you want, but please speak loudly. Okay, can we have questions later? Because we really don't have time now. So, now, here Krishna has told that we will attain that eternal abode. So, Krishna sometimes refers to himself in the third person, as we discussed. So, he is referring to that eternal abode. And you have to go and surrender to that person, from whom the whole material is expanded. So, now, now, in case the Krishna refers to the third person in order to not appear proud. You know that, like Prabhupada, you know that famous pastime. And when the devotees wanted to construct a... was it in Vrindavan? In Vrindavan or Mayapur? They wanted to construct a magnificent palace for Prabhupada. Prabhupada palace. In Vrindavan. So they wanted to construct, so their devotees went and told Prabhupada, they want to construct a palace for you. No, not required. And then they went and asked Prabhupada, they want to construct a palace for the spiritual master. Mayapur. Then Prabhupada said, go ahead. So, now the Prabhupada is the spiritual master. But what is the idea? Prabhupada doesn't want any honor for himself. So he is the spiritual master, and the spiritual master should be honored by himself. So like that, the same token, Krishna sometimes refers to himself as a third place, third person. So surrender to that supreme person, in that abode, or go to that abode. But in order, so Krishna doesn't want to seem proud, but at the same time Krishna doesn't want to seem unclear. So, whenever there might be an ambiguity, Krishna makes things clear. Therefore, the next verse, he makes it clear. He told about that eternal abode. What is that eternal abode? Tad bhasayate suryo shashanko napapakaha yastatvana nivartante tadha karmam hama. Translation, who is ready? Yes. So, they don't return to this material. That's the important thing which he's telling. Now, why have they done this? Because the next verse is in contrast about how otherwise the soul keeps wandering in material existence over here. Now, we discussed earlier this, how in the spiritual world there is sun, moon and fire. But there is no dependence. In this world, there is dependence in sun, moon and fire for illumination. But in the spiritual world, everything is self-luminous. Sun, moon and fire are there only to enhance the pastimes. So that Isharat Purnima so that Krishna becomes Krishna. For Isharat Purnima, the moon has to be there, otherwise how will we have Isharat Purnima? So, that's why they are there, but they are there only to enhance the pastimes. So time has two aspects in the spiritual world, which defines time practically. Time is the controller, time is the destroyer. In the spiritual world, time is not present in the controller and destroyer. As Acharya also explained, that this has another meaning. This is Bhāsayate Suryo. So sun is connected with the sense of vision. Shashanka, the moon is connected with the sense of mind, with the mind. And Pāvakaha, fire is connected with speech. Like he said, he gave a fire speech. So he is saying that supreme abode is beyond the power of eyes to see, beyond the power of the mind to conceive, and beyond the power of the mouth to speak. So that spiritual abode is so wonderful, but it is invisible, indescribable, inconceivable. And after describing this, so here the first section is completed. How by surrender, by detachment, one can attain liberation. And liberation means returning to the kingdom of God. But if somebody doesn't surrender in this way, then what happens to him? That is described in the next section. Mamai Vamsho Jiva Loke Jiva Bhuta Sanatana Mana Shashtani Driyani Prakritisthani Karshati. Yes. Mana Shashtani Driyani. So again the Dhanchatra Bhudyavaksha says, Indriyana Manashchati, among the senses and the mind. So the mind is extremely powerful. And in fact, in the Avadhut Brahman section, in the Avanti Brahman section, 11th canto, there it is described, the God-like power of the mind is very difficult to subdue. The God-like power of the mind. So, actually, the mind, for all practical purposes, is omnipotent. As far as the soul is concerned, we make some resolutions. And after some time, the resolution just where they go, you know. And this mind is relentless attack to dissolve and cause our resolutions to disappear. So, impelled by the mind, the soul is wandering here and there. Now, the Prabhupada's purports here are very insightful.
So Prabhupada writes in the purport that one cannot
return back to the spiritual world.
One cannot become detached just by hearing this after address. Sorry, it was in the previous purport. Yeah.
Third paragraph.
Middle.
One cannot become detached from the attraction of the material world simply by dressing himself in saffron cloth. He must become attached to the devotional service of the Lord. Third paragraph of 15.6, not 15.7. He must become, therefore one should take it very seriously that devotional service as described in the 12th chapter is the only way to get out of this false representation of the real tree. And we are talking about real tree in the spiritual world, it is a false representation. So attachment to the devotional service is the only way. And these two purports are classic. This purport and then the next purport also. So, in the middle of the second purport, the conditioned soul is bound up as though shackled by iron chains. He is bound up by the false ego and the mind is the chief agent which is driving him into spiritual existence. Driving him here and there. When the mind is in the mode of goodness, these activities are good. And when the mind is in the mode of passion, these activities are troublesome. And when the mind is in the mode of anger, it travels in the lower species of life. So the mind is driving us continuously. 15.7. Second paragraph. Now, Bhagavad Gita explains that the senses are actually like chains which shackle the soul to material existence. But by the power of Maya, the conditioned soul parades his senses as if they are a matter of pride. So it is like a prisoner showing all his iron chains. These are my chains. See how good they are. But the better the senses, the more they are likely to bind us in material existence. So karshati. The karshati comes because of the senses drive and the mind driving us here and there. After this, now how this karshati takes place is described in the next two verses. What is the struggle that goes on in material existence? The struggle is getting one body, leaving it, going to another body, and just going on in transmigration. That karshati is described. Shariram yadavap noti yachakyukramasishvara grahi paitani sanyati vayurvandhani vashaya. So, he carries his conceptions of life. So actually, what do we acquire at the end of our life when we go from this body? It's a conception of life. What is life meant for? How are we to enjoy? What is enjoyable? What is suffering? What is the cause of suffering? His conception is carried in the mind. And that's what the soul takes from one body to another. And interesting, the soul which is transmigrating like this is called as Ishvara, the controller. Now he is actually helped us in transmigrating from one body to another, but it's called Ishvara because he has one power. The power to control the direction of his journey. He will go from one body to another, but which body he will go, that he has the control. This Ishvara relates to Purvam Lakshan Vatvastha Madhya Tishtante Rajasa, 14.18. So, in this way he gives a body and takes bodies. So, after describing this, Krishna described, now earlier the sense manaha shishtanindriyani prakti samikarshati. So the mana was singled out among all the senses. So
So Karshati was described now in this world. And now how the mana is causing the Karshana is described now. Shrotram chakshuh sparshanam cha rasanam granam eva cha adishtaya manashayam visharanam devate. So, Purujana Maharaja was telling us to explain this verse. He says that even just like there is some carpenter, he has to do some tool, he has to do some job. So he carries a toolbox with him. So he says that the conditions of carrying the toolbox of the senses to do the job of sense gratification. So, senses is body, then toolbox. It contains the tools of the senses. And he's looking around, where can I do my job of sense gratification? And then, what is he doing? All the senses are centered around the mind. So all the impressions from various senses come in the mind, and the mind actually drags us in material existence. So now, I have been repeatedly given this analogy of watching the television to explain how our material existence is happening. You know, say somebody watching a movie. So Vishwakarma Puja has written a very nice article in Back to God, it's the City of Nine Gates. So there he can compare this Purujana analogy very systematically, and he explains that it's more than just a video which you are watching. The world is like a virtual reality. And one of the problems science doesn't solve right now is how are the sensory inputs integrated? That means, for even if I consider just the visual input, if I just see a bird flying by over here, it's a parrot flying by. Now scientists have found out that in the brain there are different parts which perform different functions. So if there is one part of the brain which senses color, another part of the brain which senses shape, another part of the brain which senses motion. Now when I see the bird flying by, actually all these three inputs are coming in, and there will be three different parts of the brain. But when I see it, it is not that three different signals are coming. I see it as an integrated input. So where does the integration take place? In the brain, biologically, neurologically speaking, it's neurologically means neurons are the components of the brain. So neurologically speaking, there is no part of the brain which is connected to all other parts, because there are practically 10 million neurons in the brain. And you cannot have any brain having so many synapses that can connect with all, any neuron connected with all the other neurons. So for science, they often call it the binding problem. For binding problem, how are all the impulses integrated together? So actually, it is not the integration doesn't take place in the brain. The integration takes place in the mind. The mind is like a multimedia software which integrates all the inputs that come to it. And the mind views this whole holistically. So that means wherever a television show is, wherever a cricket match is going on, the cricket match is going on, and there the camera is focused. The camera is going on the water, the batsman, and then there is a commentator going on, commentary is coming, and somebody is putting the score. Now all these are coming from different sources. The score is being updated from somewhere else. The visual is coming from one camera, the sound of the commentator is coming from one direction. But when it comes on the screen, to us it comes as integrated input. So the mind is like the integrator, and the soul is like the observer. So all the sensory inputs are integrated around the mind. That's what it describes. Shrotram chakshu sparshanam, the five senses. They are adhishtaya manashtayam. Adhishtaya means they are integrated around the adhishta, the sphere of influence for all of them is centered on the mind. And similarly, what we want to do goes from the mind to the senses. And vishayam upasevate. So upasevate, he is singular in enjoying, but actually he is doing seva of the sense of it. Vishayam upasevate. So Purujana Maharaja was telling, when a man gets attracted to a woman, then he proposes to the woman, and the woman says, Manmanabhav, Madhakto, Madhyagi, Maam, Maamevani, Shitvaktyam, De, Pratijade, Siyoshi.
always think of me, become my devotee, offer obeisances to me. In this way, you will come to me. And the soul says, Sarva Dharma and Parishtha. Tvam Ekam Saranam. I surrender to him. So Vishaya Anupasevate.
In this way, the soul is thinking that I am enjoying, but he has actually become a servant of the sense object.
Yeah, by adhyaksha. So,
in this way, he just gets bound by the senses and he keeps suffering like this. Now, after describing this, transmigration, going from one body to another, why is it that people are not able to speak? So that inability to speak is because of ignorance. And that ignorance is caused by material desire. So now Krishna, by talking about transmigration, will add jnana chakshu. How one can see? Uskramantam chitam vapi bhujanam vagunatikam vimohananu pashyanti pashyanti jnana chakshushah. So, Jnana Chakshu is coming for the second time now. Earlier it was in 13.35. Kshetra Kshetra Gayavadeva Antaram Jnana Chakshu Shaha. So, Jnana Chakshu, the eyes of knowledge one can see. Materialistic position, oh, I am enjoying his suffering, somebody else is enjoying somebody else's suffering. But the soul and knowledge is able to see, actually everybody is a pure soul with the potential to be eternally happy. But they are all suffering because they are governed by the material body. And how they are uskramantam, how suddenly they are forced to leave the body. Or even when they are living inside the body, they are simply controlled by the modes. They make much more than make them do this, do that. Vimuha nanu pashyanti. The fool they are able to see, those are jnana chakshu they are able to see. Now what is the essential difference between the vimuhas who cannot see and those who can see? That is described in the next verse.
Yatanto yoginashyainam pashyantyasmanyavastitam yatanto arhatukasmano nainam pashyantyachetasa.
So, why are they able to pashyanti? Atmanya avasthitam. Atmanya avasthitam means these transcendentalists situate themselves on the platform of the soul. Situate themselves on the platform of the soul means that they live at least in mode of goodness. So, spiritual reality can be perceived only when we come on the spiritual platform or at least on the goodness platform. Otherwise, even if one wants to see, etanto api akrutatmano. Akrutatmano means the soul is not done his homework. The homework of becoming basic purification and all that. Etanto api akrutatmano nainam pashyanti achetasaha. Achetasaha means that his consciousness is misdirected. Achetasaha. So, he was asking that, how is it that doctors he's suffering of material existence so much and every day. But now the doctors become devotees so much all the time. Anything more, any more than what other professionals do. Why? Because achetasaha. They are seeing the suffering, but they don't think of that suffering as a universal principle that is going to affect them also. They think of that suffering as a source of income for themselves. So achetasaha. There is a fact, but the fact is perceived based on our desires. So, the desire of the doctor is to earn money, then what does he see? He doesn't see that, oh, this suffering is going to come to me also. Oh, this person got suffering, I can earn money from it. And you know, some doctors, they will complicate the disease more so that they can earn it. So, the disease is there, the evidence of the suffering is there. But what happens? Achetasaha. Many times in the West, especially in America, with Katrina and other hurricanes took place. So what happened after that was like another hurricane.
All these people are devastated. And what will happen is, now the law and all this is broken down, there is no way to contact the police. And there will be the people who will go online. They will go into shops and plunder the shops. They will go and abuse helpless women and they will plunder people's houses. Now there is an entire devastation. But what are they seeing? They are not seeing that this device can end our life and Jesus will save the thing that only in the portion is the Lord order is broken up. Let's make it big, let's earn money. So, that means the fact may be there, but the fact whether we perceive it or not depends on our desire. If our desire is directed, then we interpret the fact according to what our desires are. All of you know the story of that anti-alcoholic campaign. An anti-alcoholic campaigner wanted to demonstrate to a group of alcoholics how dangerous alcohol is. So he gave a talk and he said, now I demonstrate to you. What he had done, he had a bottle of alcohol and transparent bottle was there. And then he took out an insect which he had in a small box. And he took the insect, he threw it into the alcohol. And in a few minutes, few moments only, the insect fluttered, fell to the bottom of the bottle and died. So he said, what do you learn from this?
All the alcohol trying to feed out,
What alcohol is it? He raised his hand. He said, what do you learn? He said, when we drink alcohol, all the germs and worms in our stomach will die. So, as long as we have material desires, we cannot actually change. We cannot perceive the reality. So at least to some extent, that's why Prabhupada emphasized the following of the four elements principles. So the four elements will bring us at least to some level of sense control by which goodness can develop. And then we can start perceiving the reality. So without this basic sense control, even if one endeavors, I want to see how this world is a piece of misery. But one cannot see. Because even in that misery, one sees Maya will give us the vision of enjoyment. Here you can enjoy. This is the key difference. And this was also for us, it applies us. You know, sometimes we hear what we don't get realization. Because that akṛtātmānaḥ, that we hear but it doesn't register in the mind. Because the homework of giving up basic sense gratification has not been done. And as long as we don't do that, we see the reality but paśyam api na paśyati. Our mind creates some other identity. So, now, after describing this, Arjuna asks the question, so that means by Jnana Chakshu one can see, how does one develop the Jnana Chakshu? That Krishna will describe in the next four verses. So, Jnana Chakshu is how one can see, although I am in materialistic consciousness and I have material desire, and I cannot see spiritual reality, but let me at least begin by seeing how my materialistic world and my materialistic sense gratification is also sustained by God. That means, okay, I cannot see God, I cannot see soul, but what I see is under the, that's what I value. But even this I cannot have without God at least. So that is the beginning of the Jnana Chakshu. Yad aditya gatam tejo jagat bhasayate akhilam yachandrahati yachadnau tattejo vidhimamakam.
The splendor of the sun, which dissipates the darkness of this old world, comes from me. The splendor of the moon and the splendor of stars are also from me.
So now, contrast 15.12, 15.6. In 15.6, it is described that the spiritual world does not require sun, moon or fire. Now, this world requires sun, moon and fire. But where is the sun, moon and fire getting their illumination from? It is from the sun. It is from the Lord himself. That means, when we need illumination in this world, that is coming from the sun. So without illumination, we can't see, we can't do anything. So in this way, the basis of our existence is Krishna's religion. So first he says that actually sun is not just giving illumination, it's also giving energy. Sun is the active principle without which we cannot exist at all. Some scientists are nowadays fearful that our son is becoming old and they think their son will die. Then we realize that all of us will also have to die. This is some temples have increased or decreased. And of course, they have all sorts of confusing ideas about what the sun. Some people say that actually the solar sun's heat is because of nuclear fusion. Some others say it is because of some other mechanism. There are quite a wide number of theories. But the point is, all scientists also agree that life on Earth is indispensably dependent on the sun. Indispensably dependent on the sun. So, without the sun, we could not live. Now, the interesting argument for this versus can be used to build the design argument. The design argument is what? That we see that this world is so well designed, therefore there has to be a designer. That's what we use this call yourself. Now, the design argument is primarily a Christian argument. In the Vedic literature, that was rarely, if ever, used. In fact, Ramanacharya, Vedanta Deshika, all of them refute design argument. For the simple reason, it's not that they say that actually it's a different culture. It's a different cultural context. Ramanacharya, most of them say that you establish God based on logic, this is a God based on logic. You have succeeded in the religious motive. That is, establishing the existence of God. But you have defeated a higher religious aspect of faith in scripture. So what has happened is, people's faith in logic has increased. And then, when the faith in logic has increased, in the future, when you say, oh, my logic can prove the existence of God, and scripture tells you about God. And then, they will examine scripture through the prism of logic. And then they find that something in scripture is not according to logic, then they will reject that part of scripture. So what happens by that is, he's not rejecting the existence of God, he's not rejecting the design argument per se. What he's rejecting is the emphasis on logic. So he says, then when part of scripture are against logic, people will reject it. So therefore, Shastra Yomitva. The Vedanta Sutra says, the third Sutra Vedanta Sutra is, first is Kathātva Brahma Jignyasa, second is Janmādhyasthyata, and third is Shastra Yomitva. So how can that Brahma be known? It is only through Shastra. So only through Shastra that Brahma can be known. So now, can we know God through Pratyaksha Anumana? To some extent we can know. Some extent we can know. Now, the overemphasis on logic, this was the downfall of Christianity. You know, as the 17th, 18th century passed, what happened was, many aspects of the biblical truth were proven to be false. One aspect was that their cosmology was proven to be false. And then, after that, it was also proven that and there are a lot of changes in the Bible. And you know, this verse was added at this time, this verse was deleted, and this was done. And this is very well documented. There was a New York Times bestseller called Misquoting Jesus. Misquoting Jesus. And it documents century after century. In this century, which scribe added which verse? And which scribe deleted which verse? And for what reason? So, that is very well documented. So, because of this, what happened was people's faith in Christianity had a shape. So the Christian theologians started using the design argument. See, the world is so well-designed. Actually, science is telling you that there is God. Science is telling you there is God. And God is so wonderful. So, and God is so kind. Science is showing us how kind this world, God is to this world, how well He has designed it. But then, when Darwin came along, he said, you know, my Christian brothers say that this world is filled with God's kindness. I don't see any kindness in nature. I see that when a lion attacks a deer, it kills the deer with a bloody delight and it feasts on it. So we see in nature not kindness but cruelty. And that cruelty is ingrained in nature. And in nature we don't see a remorse of regret because of the cruelty. There is a bestial delight in the cruelty. I don't see any benevolence. So what happens is, when there's an overemphasis on logic, then what happens is, then just as water can float a ship, water can sink a ship. So logic can increase one's faith in God, logic can destroy one's faith in God. So, now of course, in Kali Yuga, you know, we don't have to worry about the problem which Vedanta Deshika had to worry about. that, you know, we don't want people to have faith in logic, we want people to have faith only in scripture. That is not going to happen only. People already have a lot of faith in logic. So we use logic, well, then they have faith in scripture. So it's a circumstantial use of the argument. But the circumstantial use has to be carefully done. So, which one? Okay, a good point. So, the circumstantial argument, so the Zen argument, when the Christians use it, they use it in a different way. You know, for example, they will argue, see, this world is so amazingly designed. If the earth were a little closer to the sun, it would be too hot for life to be possible. If the earth were a little further away from the sun, it would be too hot for life to be possible. If the earth's moon was a little smaller than what it was, and the earth would not be tilted 23.5 degrees, and then you would not have seasons, and there would be no life. So if the earth did not have Jupiter at the same distance where it is, Jupiter is guru. Jupiter acts like a gravitational vacuum cleaner. That means what? All the meteorites and asteroids that come, it sucks them into its right gravity. So they say that if Jupiter had been one planet away, getting in the position of Saturn, then we would have an asteroid hitting our planet every alternate week. And if Jupiter had been in the place of Mars, then we would have been the asteroid hitting Jupiter. So, it is just, see how carefully God has designed everything. And our earth is so uniquely positioned for life. Now, this argument is, we can also use it. And we can use it, but we have to be careful. What is the caution? That the Christian argument is based on the uniqueness of earth as the only arena of life. And they try to use science to prove that. So now when we use it, we have to say that it's not necessary that life is there only on this planet. But according to modern science, there are certain criteria required for life. And those criteria to come by chance is extremely improbable. Therefore, according to the logic of current sciences itself, the earth has to be there. So it's a provisional logic. So in sense, life can exist in different form, and yes, the planet is close to the sun, the soul can have hot bodies over it. Body suited for the hot climate. But the point is, the design argument, if we use it, we have to use it very carefully. What is the caution? That the earth is not unique from the Vedic point of view. There are life is everywhere, it's sarvagataha. But the point is that we can use the scientists, we can play the scientist game with them only. As if you say that actually the universe has come from a Big Bang, okay, assuming that it has come from a Big Bang, still the arrangement is there, it is too remarkable, it cannot have come by chance. It is either that life has to be there. So it can be used. So here Krishna is telling us that I am the sustainer of everything. And that he will illustrate in the next verse further. So first he says, I am the source of illumination and energy. Next verse he says, कामाविश्य च भूतानि धारयामि अहमोजसा पुष्णामि च औषधि सर्वा सोमो भूत्वा रसात्मकः. So what scientists call as gravity is actually the force of Balaramji, who is sustaining all the planets. Now, it's interesting that gravity also has a circular definition. If you ask scientists, why are the planets moving in their orbits? Because of gravity. What is gravity? It's the force which keeps planets moving in their orbits. So, where is the explanation? So, much of science is basically observing the phenomena and giving a name to the phenomena as if the name explains the phenomena. So, naming a phenomena is not explaining the phenomena. So, basically, gravity is coming from Balaramji. And then, Ushnami Chaushadhi Sarva Sarvo Bhutvara Satmaka. So, currently, I am part of a research panel, there is a lot of research on this. So, there is a lot of evidence that actually the moon plays a remarkable role in nourishment of crops. And it is known to traditional farmers.
that the moon does play a role. But they have, the scientists have found, actually when the moon is there, they say that the moon's heat or moon's rays are cooling. Illusion. And that cooling must just, that cooling rays stimulate certain growth in the crops. And that's how they grow. So there is what is called the Krebs cycle, which they describe. And the moon plays a very important role in that. So scientists are also discovering this also. It is very advanced science in the Bhagavad Gita. Right? The moon is important for the nourishment of crops. So, and generally the moon is not there, the crops may grow, but they are not at all juicy. He says, I am the juice which is there. So, mu bhutvarasatmaka. After describing this, so Krishna is starting from, look at the universe, then look at the earth. Then, look at the crops. So first, I maintain the universe, then I maintain the earth, then I maintain the food that you eat. And then he will say, I maintain the body with which you work also. Aham vaishvanaro bhutva praninam deham ashritaha pranapana samayuktaha pacham annam chaturvidham. So the fire of digestion is actually Krishna. Vishwanahu, that is the food. So you see, there is cosmological, ecological, physiological. All levels which science talks about, they all are maintained by Krishna. So you won't go into digestion too much. All of us have experience. We remember our digestion only when it doesn't work. So as you say, God gives and forgives, we get and forget. So that's the misfortune. But it's Krishna that is the food. And scientists have their models, they say acidity and this and that. But there are some diseases of the body, like arthritis, back problem and digestion problems, for which allopathy doesn't have much cure. Because, you know, allopathy is good to some extent when some organs are broken down. You know, you can stitch them up and something are good. It is also good for diagnosis in terms of what is happening in tiny cell of a body you can find out. But as far as curing of chronic disease is concerned, it is quite poor. So you actually know how digestion takes place. So I mentioned this, that scientists were trying to make a digestive machine in the body. But they found it that it is impossible to make. They will not need a machine, they will need a factory, a chain of factories. And they gave up the idea. Their current understanding is that, you know, when you consider work as force into displacement, so the amount of work that is required to digest one morsel of food is more than the amount of work that an average human being performs throughout the day. So who is doing that? So, you know, the elementary canal is so long and the peristalsis is, the movement is happening. And as that movement is happening, the food is moving down, down, down. It's a huge amount of work required. So, it is actually Krishna who is doing that for us. Yes? Eighteen chapter. Just remember it. So there is a section which says Karmani Abhirata, that time is discussed. Okay? So now, Krishna says, I not only provide for your material necessities, I also provide for your spiritual necessity. What is spiritual necessity? It is knowledge, by which you can understand the purpose of the world and return back to it. Krishna is telling four vital facts in this verse. Every life contains an important fact. First thing, I am seated in everybody's heart. And that's a fact which he has already told. Actually, till now he has not explicitly told that he is in the heart. He has said that super soul is in the heart. Rudhi sarvasya vishtikam. That he has not explicitly mentioned that super soul am I. That's the important fact which he is telling here for the first time. Second thing he is telling is, a super soul, what does he do? Mattaha smriti jnanam apohanam cha. He gives knowledge as Guru Sadhu Shastra from outside, and as Super Soul inside, depending on our desire, he gives the remembrance or forgetfulness. If we have a strong desire to serve the spiritual master, then he will give remembrance. But if you have a strong desire to enjoy, then you will give forgetfulness. So the Super Soul is very active in the heart. And, you know, remembrance is, to a large extent, we think remembrance is a function of memory. I don't have a strong memory, so I can't remember. But remembering facts is not as important as remembering Krishna. And we may or may not be able to remember facts. That is just a product of our past karma, the kind of brain we have. But a person may remember a lot of facts and not remember Krishna. But a person may not remember facts and still remember Krishna. So that remembrance of Krishna is not a function of our material memory. It is a function of our desire. If we have a strong desire to remember Krishna, Krishna will give us that memory. So that's why there is a difference between material memory and spiritual memory. In a way, as I said, we may remember verses and not remember the Lord whom we are worshipping through the verses. We may not remember any verses and we may remember the Lord very nicely. So this is not to discourage remembering verses, but the point is that there is some spiritual memory which is beyond material memory. And the third point is this is, Vedaishya Sarvair Ahameva Vedyo. Now, there are so many Vedas and I have given the Vedas to you. So Krishna is telling Arjuna, how do I help you spiritually? How do I help the conditions of spiritually? I come to the Super Soul in the heart and I give remembrance from within. But how will that person get knowledge first? The knowledge comes from the Veda. Wherein I give the Vedas. And the ultimate purpose of the Vedas, I am that purpose. Veda is by Aham Eva Vedyo. Vedanta Krut Veda Vedeva Chaham. Because it is I only who I compile the Vedas. Therefore, I know the ultimate import of the Vedas. Yes? Good question. So, I mentioned this earlier, I'll repeat this. Are these verses similar to Swami Sukantaya? So, the 7th chapter describes Krishna, how he is the essence or the source of everything. So, the water, essence is taste. For earth, the essence is fragrance. For a human being, essence is ability. And it is kind of the essence, the most important feature of the source. The 10th chapter is describing the vibhutis, how in a category Krishna is the best. Here, Krishna is describing that I am the maintainer. There are different things. So Krishna is the source, the source of everything, he is the best in everything, and he is the maintainer of everything. Source of everything, no, sorry, four things. Source of everything, essence of everything, best of everything, and maintainer of everything. So source and essence of everything is 7th chapter, best of everything is 10th chapter, and maintainer of everything is the 15th chapter. Good question. Now, after this, Krishna starts describing, Arjuna gets, you know the Vedanta, Vedanta is so complicated. Can you please tell me what the Vedanta is? So, he will describe that in brief. So, Chakravarti Pal calls this three verses as a three Shloki Gita, 16, 17, 18. So, you have five verses, can you complete this? It will take around 10 minutes. Should we do it tomorrow? So we don't have any question. If you have any questions, please note them down. You can discuss them tomorrow if you have time. We'll just complete it now. So Krishna starts describing the summary of Vedanta, the essence of Vedanta in the next three verses. So first he starts with Dvavimau Purushau Loke Sharashakshara Evacha Sharasarvani Bhutani Bhutasthokshara Uchyate. So, we start with Akshara and Akshara. Now, fallible and infallible, what does it mean? The soul has fallen into this material world and is fallible. The soul has not fallen into this material world, it is infallible. Now, after describing this, he starts the next verse. Uttama Purusha Svanya Paramatmanti Udavata Yoloka Trayamavishya Vihartyavya Ishvara.
Mm-hmm.
So it's very clear, Anyaha. Somebody else is there apart from these two. And that is, who is, what is his name? Paramatma is himself. He is called the Paramatma. And what is he doing? Yo lokat prema vishya. All three worlds is entered. And he is vibharta. He is maintaining all the three worlds. So it's interesting, he is saying that this person, this is beyond the fallible and infallible also. Now, if you put two and two together, just three verses ago, in the 13th verse, what does Krishna say? He has said that Gam avishyati bhutane, I enter the world. Now you see that Paramatma enters the world. So basically the two are the same. So there might be some ambiguity, but Krishna makes it clear in the next verse.
Yasmat sharamati toham aksharadapichottama ato tiyoke devdevcha krishna purushottama.
Yes. So here the word comes Purushottama. Yasmat. So now earlier was Uttama Purushattva Anya. So Anya means somebody beyond the Akshara and Akshara. And here also same thing. Yasmat Sharam Atito Aham Akshara Dapichottama. So I am beyond the Akshara and Akshara. Tosmi. Therefore, Loke Vedeja. In this world and in the Vedas. I am celebrated as Purushottama. Supreme person. The best person. So in this way, Krishna has established himself as a supreme person. Now Chakravarti Bhagavan has an interesting analysis over here. He said that actually Shara are the living entities and Akshara is the Brahma Jyoti. So he says the Paramatma is beyond the Atma and the Brahma Jyoti. And Krishna is beyond the Atma, Brahma Jyoti and Paramatma. In this way, so Krishna is the Purushottama. So after establishing this, these are very, very categorical verses which cannot be reinterpreted to suit the Mayavadi philosophy in a very easy way. So these are very, very strong verses. Two categories of souls and beyond the third category. The third category is Krishna. So generally the Mayavadi idea is that Krishna is at best a liberated soul. And actually when you truly become liberated, you go beyond that to the Brahman. Krishna said, no, even beyond the liberated soul, I exist. So, now after doing this, Krishna hammers home that message in the last two verses. What is told in the last verse of Purushottama, so Chakravarti Path, you know, Chakravarti Path says, the Chakravarti Path says, no, but people will doubt and people will argue. They will not accept this conclusion that you are Purushottama. He says, let them doubt and argue. They are all fools. The wise person will not argue, he will accept this. Choma meva asam mudho janati purushottama sadarva vibhajati maam sarva bhare na bharata. So, yomam eva. Eva means certainly, asammudho. Without any doubt, what he janati, he knows he to be purushottama. So, what happens to him? Sir, that person is sarvavit. He knows everything. Krishna started with this chapter by talking about this person who understands this ashwatha tree to be vedavit. But he is saying that person, if you understand this material world to be a reflection, you will be Vedavit. But if you understand me, you will become Sarvavit. So there's a difference. Even if somebody knows the Vedas, one may not know Krishna. But when one knows everything, one knows the Vedas and one knows Krishna also. But to know Krishna means to know everything. And what is the effect of that knowledge? Yomam Sarvavit Bhastima Sarva Bhajati Ma Sarva Bhavena Bharata. So he will worship, he will worship me how? Wholeheartedly, sarva-bhava, with all the emotions of his heart. Bharata. Now this verse is very similar to? Yes, perfect, pinpointed, very good. Iti matva bhajantema udha bhava samanvitaha. So here is sarva-bhavena. Samanvita is also complete bhava. Very good correlation. So now, it's also described that
these two last two verses contain sambandha, vidaya and prayojan. So, yomaiva sammudu janati purushottama sa sarvavit. This is sambandha. And bhajate maam sarvabhavena bharata. That is abhideya. So, you, first you understand that I am the purushottama and you are my servant. You will get sambandha jnana. Start doing bhakti of me, that is abhideya. And then the next verse will describe the prayojana.
Iti guhyatamam shastram idamuktam mayanada etat buddhva buddhimam syar sutakutyascha bharata.
So, here Krishna resolved that contradiction. I had told you earlier, the contradiction between Krishna is first telling, Naham Vedai, and now he is saying Vedaisya Sarvai, Aham Eva Vedyo. So, all the Vedas are meant to know me. But just by reading the Vedas, one cannot know me. Why? Because this is Guhyatama Shastra. This is in Shastra, but it is Guhyatama. It is very hidden. It is Guhyatama, not just Guhya, but again Guhyatama. Like earlier Krishna said, the most Guhyatama Jnana. But here he is talking about Vedas, so this is the most Guhyatama knowledge which is given in the Shastra. Idam Uktam Maya Anagha. So Arjuna, Chakravarti Pada said that one has to be sinless to be able to develop faith in this knowledge. Maya Anagha. Anagha means sinful. Agar Dhasa. Anagha is. And Etad Buddha. Once you understand this, you will become Buddhiman. You become very intelligent. And after that, if we act according to the Buddhi, Kutta Kutteshya Bharata. His endeavors will know success. His endeavors will know success means, he has referred that, with this knowledge, Arjuna, if you fight, your endeavor will know success. You will attain victory in this life, in this world, and the next world also. So here, he completes the Purushottam Yoga with a very categorical description, both of the Supreme Sadhya and Supreme Sadhana. Supreme Sadhya is Krishna himself. Asammudho Purushottama Janati. And the Supreme Sadhana is Sarvabhavena Bharata Bhajati. So he has established very clearly. And now after describing this, Arjuna gets the question, oh, it's so clear, you know, who are the people who accept this, who are the people who don't accept it? So there's been something similar to after 7.7.40, people who surrender, people who don't surrender. That will be described in the next chapter. So Krishna described the vruksha. Now we will describe the phala of the vruksha. The best phala of the vruksha is Krishna Prema. But apart from that, it gives many other phalas. That will be the divine and demoniac natures. So thank you very much. Srimad Bhagavad Gita ki jai. Prabhupada ki jai. Gaur Bhaktavinoda ki jai. Gaur Prema.